This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Swing and a looper into left center field. This is going to get down for a base hit. Here comes Phillips. He will score the tying run. In the third goes a Rosarena. It's an 8-8 game, and the Rays have the winning run 90 feet away.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
First pitch to him. Line back up the middle, but there is Franco. To the left of the bag, he turns and throws him out, and the Rays have won it in Atlanta.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good afternoon. Welcome to our latest show. Today we sit down with reliever Jason Adam and discuss his new home. Brian Anderson will join us to discuss the week gone by. We'll be joined by last year's first-round pick Carson Williams. Plus, as we wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month, we'll chat with Sammy Byerly of Baseball Operations and pitching coach Kyle Snyder about Gene Ramirez. And we'll visit with Danny Docks of Baseball Operations.
Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our featured guest this week is one of the many standout relievers in the Rays bullpen, and joining us right now is Jason Adam in his first year with the Rays organization. Jason, we certainly appreciate a few minutes.
I appreciate you having me on, Neil.
Tell me what you've enjoyed most so far about this season. At least on paper, it's been your best season at the big league level to date.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a fun season. I think to say what I enjoy most, I think it's just the guys that are here, the players, the coaching staff. They're all easy to get along with, a fun group of guys. So we have a blast down there in the bullpen. But at the same time, there's a lot of smart people in this organization who can teach you how to get better. And us guys in the bullpen, we get serious when we need to. But other than that, we're just having a good time.
You had played for a handful of different organizations before the Rays. What has made this place maybe a little bit different? You know, you talk about the fun. Is it more fun than any other place you've been?
I would say yes. And I think part of that, any time I wasn't having the fun in the past was likely my fault just from being overstressed or thinking about things that out of my control. So I think that's part of it. But also I think this organization from top to bottom does a great job clearly communicating expectations and clearly communicating that, hey, you do whatever gets the most out of you and just have success on the field and be yourself otherwise. So it frees a lot of us up, I think, to have a bit more fun. But yeah, so I think it's a great organization from top to bottom.
We had one of those other fun guys with us as our feature guest last week in JP Fireisen. He said that you and Kittredge's dad jokes have kind of stolen the show down in the bullpen this year. What's your take on that?
I'm honored. I'm honored to be in the conversation with Kit. He's a legendary dad joker. So just to be mentioned in that wake is unbelievable.
So tell me, what is your favorite? You have a go-to dad joke or one that you remember that Kit has said that has had the bullpen like roaring?
Oh, jeez. Oh, man, that's tough. So Kit's got the good scripted jokes, like the ones that you can repeat. Mine are more, I usually just make puns off of guys' names. You know, we had a lot of fun when Trout passed, who did he pass? Salmon on the like all-time home runs in Anaheim. So we had a lot of fun making puns off of that. But I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Have you always been known as a dad joke guy, or has this kind of been kind of a new thing with you and Kit?
No, I think that's been my MO for a few years now. I don't know. I'm at my best when I'm not all that serious. So I think I enjoy laughing. I enjoy if I can get other people laughing or if I can just get other people saying, oh my, come on, that's terrible. So that's probably what I enjoy even more.
And I know you've also gotten the nickname, what, two names? JP says, because Jason and Adam, obviously, is that, where does that nickname rank up in some, because I'm sure you play baseball long enough, you're going to get a million different nicknames.
Yeah. This is the first one that's really stuck. Honestly, I mean, Jason, Adam, like there's not a lot of nicknames that can come from either one of those. So JP got one and it stuck. So kudos to him.
And obviously kudos to you in the way that you're pitching. You know, you mentioned the environment here and how it makes you comfortable. How much of that is mental versus anything that they've done with you physically at all?
you're exactly right with that question. It's two-sided. It's mental and physical. I think from the physical side, they tell you what pitches are good, why they're good, where to throw them, etc. But from the mental side, you also have that comfort that they know they've crunched the numbers. They say, if you do this over time, we're trusting that your numbers will line up to be in this range. And so at the end of the day, if you make a good pitch and it gets hit, you can sleep easy knowing that, just like I can sleep easy knowing I know that was a good pitch, but I also know they know that was a good pitch and that they're trusting the numbers over time, as opposed to as performers, like you can make three good pitches, give up three bloop broken bat singles, and all of a sudden you give up a run. They're not so focused on that run. They're more focused on the execution of the pitches, knowing that over time. I don't know if that made sense, but it's just nice knowing that they're trusting the process, so you can trust the process.
I'm guessing other places you have been, that doesn't exist necessarily. No knock on anywhere else you've been.
I think everywhere wants to be like that, but it's really hard, especially at the big league level, because you have to answer. Every game is vitally important in the major leagues. So if you got a guy giving up a few runs, even if he's making his pitches, like someone has to answer for those runs. So it's tough to do. So here it does it really, really well.
You know, you have, and I think a lot of guys in that bullpen are succeeding too because of their life experience. You're 30 years of age. And I think someone had joked, you know, you're saying, hey, 30, I finally got my first big league save. But,
yeah.
But at that same time, you have experience enough in life where you probably feel a lot more comfortable in your own skin than a 23-year-old who hasn't been through all that yet.
100%. Yeah. And I'm a firm believer that everything good, bad, and different in our lives happens for a reason and works together for our good. So whether it's the injuries I went through, whatever, like having three kids at home, all that, I think that all contributes for our good and can be used to grow you as a man and even a baseball player. So yeah, 100%. I think that us guys down there, a little more seasoned off the field, but maybe a little bit younger as far as like big league experience, it helps us relax and just know who we are.
So let's touch on some of those life experiences. As a dad, how much does that help? You mentioned being a dad of three kids. How has that helped you gain perspective and maybe help you grow as a pitcher?
It's a great perspective giver. I mean, at the end of the day, my three daughters, they don't care how I pitch. If I pitch great, they're not all that impressed. If I pitch terrible, they still want me to come home and be a fun dad. So it's nice going home and having that separation. Where I think when I was younger, I'd obsess over the game and worship the game. Now I kind of have that built-in distraction of like, you know what, leave it at the field. You've done everything you can. And let's just, good or bad, let's just focus on being a good dad. And then we'll focus on baseball when it's time to focus on baseball.
You grew up on the game. How often did you go to Royals games as a kid growing up in the Kansas City area?
As much as I could. But I mean, you know how it is with youth sports. I feel like starting at age like 9, I was going to playing like 50, 70 games a summer. But yeah, we'd always do team trips to the Royals game. Yeah, I love going to those games. And it's a beautiful stadium. So, I grew up loving baseball.
Was there ever a Royals versus Cardinals? I know the rivalry there is big. Did you ever have to really choose between the two, or was Kansas City chosen for you?
Kansas City was pretty easy to choose. I mean, it's like 20 minutes from my house, St. Louis. Although I will say I did love Mark McGwire. I dressed up as him for like two Halloweens, I think. So I guess my loyalty wasn't all that thick, but Royals were my team just because there was 20 minutes from the house. I didn't go to Busch Stadium until I played in it.
Did you want to be a starting pitcher always as a kid growing up, or when did the relief opportunity come out as a professional?
It's interesting. I didn't really think about it much as a kid, whether starter reliever. I think I really wanted to be a position player. I can't hit for a breaking ball, and I probably can't hit a straight one anymore either. But I think the more I always dreamt about, like when I think about pitching, being in that big moment, like, you know, end of a game, bases loaded, like, you know, every kid does in the backyard. So that would lend to more of a reliever mindset. But I was a starter coming through the minor leagues my first 4 years. And then after I missed 15, 16 and most of 17 with my elbow injury, the decision was like, all right, like you're relieving now. We're not going to build you back up to starting. And I've loved it. It's been so good for me. I think my mindset's better built for relieving. Yeah, I love it.
Who were your best mentors with that? Because it's never an easy transition to make. You know, people say, oh, it's easy to go from starter to reliever, less times through the order, shorten them up, but the mentality's different, the prep's different. Who were your big mentors?
So many people have helped me with that, with all aspects of pitching throughout my career. I think have a friend out in San Diego. His name's Dom Johnson. He's helped me just with everything pitching. I shortened up my arm action when I was hurt. He helped me through that. And just the mentality of attacking hitters. He's helped me a ton. He's been probably the biggest help in my career pitching wise. But every coach I've had along the way, because it's been a growing, there's been some growing pains, like he said, but every coach has had impact. And then even coming here this year, getting to talk to Andrew Kittredge, who had obviously a great year last year, having a great year this year, just talking to him about mindset out there and how to attack hitters. So too many to name for sure.
And you brought up the injuries that you had, 15, 16, 17, but last year's injury, while it wasn't an arm injury, might've been physically more brutal. In short form, tell our fans what happened and how difficult that rehab was, maybe compared to some of the others.
Yeah, this one. So what happened was I was shagging BP. I just got optioned to Des Moines. So I was in AAA, shagging BP, just jumped for a ball kind of casually, landed, heard a pop, and all of a sudden I was on the ground. I was like, huh, I think I must have sprained my ankle. But I looked down and the bone was sticking out of the skin. So obviously got rushed to the hospital. They put it all back together that night. And then I got DFA'd a couple days after, which goes into how you talked about the rehab process. I think that worked in my favor that I got designated, because I didn't have a team looking over my shoulder. So what I was doing was I was in a cast and I was just throwing from my knees, so that once the foot was healthy, I was able to ramp up my throwing program quicker. So it was a physically scary injury initially, because you know, you hear about Alex Smith, all those, if it gets infected, it's terrible. But thankfully no infection. And so once we cleared that risk of infection, which was after a couple weeks, I think the rehab was just laying on the couch, throwing a ball into a wall, and then slowly starting to ramp it back up and, you know, getting in a walking boot, walking a little bit. And I didn't run at all last year. So when I got back up to the big leagues, if a team would have bunted on me, I would have been in trouble. but then this offseason, I focused more on getting that explosiveness back and can run and cover first, and I can jog in from the bullpen, which is really all I need to do.
Was that more scary, at least for the first 2 weeks, than previous? Or was this one a little easier than some of the things you went through mentally before?
This was the hardest mentally for that short period of time. Yeah, I think I literally just watched that Alex Smith documentary with my wife like a week or two before. So I was scared. First time in my life, I was legitimately scared, or like it even entered my mind, you know, that like your mortality kind of enters your mind. And that was obviously a bit dramatic, but it was just kind of where my head was while I was looking at my leg in the ambulance. And then, so that was weird. But then once we got through that, like you said, after a couple of weeks, it was a grind, kind of, because I was unemployed and I didn't have a team. So that was in a different aspect. But physically, the elbow rehabs, I think, were tougher just because we didn't know what was happening. We didn't understand why it kept, like, it wouldn't get healthy. So that was a mental grind then too.
Well, you've gotten yourself in a great place. I want to close with one fun question, since we talked about, you know, the camaraderie of the bullpen. You are a dad of three. Obviously, yep. You've got a loving wife who's helped you get to this point. If you had to pick one member of either the bullpen or the team to babysit so you and your wife could get a date night, who do you trust the most and why?
Oh, my gosh. Who do I trust? Well, there's a few of them down there with kids, so I'll disqualify them, because obviously if I say not them, then I'm insulting their parenthood.
Okay.
So I would say I think JP, I think my kids would have fun with JP. He doesn't seem trustworthy on face value, but I think he is. He's a trustworthy guy.
All right. We'll go with that. Good stuff. Jason, you have gotten off to a terrific start with this team. We hope it continues for a long time to come. And we certainly appreciate some time on This Week in Rays Baseball.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That's Jason Adam. We'll continue right after this. You're listening to the Rays Baseball Network.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. I'm Yul Solons, now joined by Brian Anderson of Bally Sports Sun. BA, thanks very much for being with us.
Of course, Neil. Anytime.
Well, we're at that marker. The first marker of the regular season, Memorial Day, is tomorrow. What have you learned to this point, and what stands out for you?
Wow. You know what? That this team, as well as they have played at times and where they stand, you know, as relative to their peers in the American League, they still haven't, I think, hit their stride. and had all three facets of the game firing on all cylinders. I think we've seen glimpses of it. We obviously, covering this team, you know, day in and day out, know what they're capable of, but I don't think that they've played up to their potential yet. Certain guys, certainly, but overall, you know, the defense at times has been suspect. The offense has, you know, especially right now, it has not been clicking. Certain guys are, but they've not been able to put it all together. And so I still think there's room for this this team to grow. And, you know, the biggest thing I've pulled out is just the inconsistency, I guess. And then when you look, again, relative to their peers in the American League, you know, they're still in good shape. And that's what you get when, unfortunately, you look at half of the American League stinks. So, you know, you just continue to play, you know, baseball, and hopefully they can get things going, and then they can take off.
All right. Well, how much of the separation between the Rays and Yankees are due to the fact that the Yankees have had basically the same five starters healthy, and the Rays still haven't had Boz, haven't had Patino, and finally, Ryan Yarbrough seems stretched out after his outing the other day?
I think it's a big deal. I think that that's really what stood out about this series is the New York pitching staff and how well they have thrown the ball. Nestor Cortez, you know, the numbers, there's nothing fluky, I guess is what I'm trying to say. When you watch these guys pitch, there's nothing fluky about their numbers. Cortez was, so good in game one. Jameson Taillon was even better in game two. You know what Gerrit Cole is capable of. It looks like Luis Severino, over his last couple of starts, he's starting to round into shape. And that's the difference with that team right now is their pitching. And, you know, the Rays, again, you're trying to piece this all together. You're getting Ryan Yarbrough stretched out. You're transitioning Jeffrey Springs into a starting role all on the fly. You know, that's not very easy to do without putting a tremendous amount of strain on your bullpen, and yet the Rays have managed to do that. And now Springs is good to go. Yarbrough's good to go. Hopefully, you know, Shane Boz is doing his thing, down there rehabbing, and hopefully he'll be back in a relatively short, time frame. And, of course, the top two, when you think about, well, Corey Kluber yesterday, outstanding, and you knew that was going to happen. If he has a start that doesn't live up to his standards, he does a great job of bouncing back. And then your top two with Rasmussen and McClanahan have been absolutely locked down. So it's going to be a battle all season long, and I'm looking forward to, obviously, the game today. And then you're still going to get the Yankees six more times in the next couple of weeks. So measuring stick games all around.
And we'll get to Shane in a moment. You touched on Jeffrey Springs. How hard is what he's done, and how easy has he made it look?
100%. That's the thing I think that has really been impressive, is not just his lines, his numbers, but just how he's been able to do this. You know, I didn't even really think or realize that was in the cards. You thought, well, this is a guy that can go out there, you know, multiple innings. He can get out right-handers and left-handers. And then, you know, so it makes sense. But then all of a sudden it started to happen. And you're like, well, now you've got to do this not in spring training. You're basically going through spring training as a starting pitcher during the regular season. And that is not easy to do at all. But you know what? They gave him, you know, an expectation. They gave him a target number of pitches. Get there. And the thing about Jeffrey Springs that's been, really nice and fun to watch is just how efficient he is. So he's been able to make the most of those pitches. And now that he's fully stretched out, he's a guy that you can send out there, and he has the arsenal and the pitchability to be able to go through a lineup a third time, because he has a good feel out there with what he's doing. He's got the three pitches. He's been able to keep them sharp and use them to both sides of the plate. And it's been really exciting watching his development right before our very eyes as a tremendous starting pitcher in this rotation.
Yeah, 2 years in a row the Rays have done this, first with Rasmussen, and now it's spring, stretching them out while the season is going on. But they've got a guy who is a starter on the mound today. What's impressed you most about Shane McClanahan?
I mean, that's hard to even answer. I think probably the fact that I can't remember a start where one of his four pitches struggled. You know, a lot of guys will throw, you know, they've got three pitches, they've got four pitches, and usually on any given, you know, start, one of those is not going to be up to par. One of them he's going to shy away from because it's not very good that particular day. I can't remember a game like that for Shane. The fact that he's able to have four plus pitches, four put away pitches, when you look at his whiff rate, especially on the breaking balls, curveball, the slider, you know, the changeup, and even the fastball, obviously he can blow you away with that. But you've got four-plus pitches, four put-away pitches, and they are sharp each and every start. It's just been amazing how consistent he has been and how, you know, obviously good he has been.
Mound presence has been incredible. I want to look at the other side and tell me, as a pitcher, what you're seeing with Wander Franco. Is he getting himself out more, or is he being pitched that tough that guys are getting him out in certain spots? And if so, where?
Well, this started back in that Boston series at Tropicana Field, you know, 3-4 weeks ago, however long it was. This season's starting to speed up a little bit. But that series, they started throwing him changeups. And they started having success. Swings and misses, weak ground balls to the right side. And I even remarked, you know, during those games, I said, this is going to become the blueprint. This is going to become the blueprint. Every team, they've got this video. They're seeing that Boston's having success, and they're having success with the changeup. He's going to see a ton of changeups going forward. Well, that has played itself out. And so early on, it was that particular pitch and getting Wander a little bit out of sync and out of rhythm. What has happened is that pitch and the lack of success, the little struggle that he has gone through, it's gotten him in between. He is now a hitter that is in between. And what I mean by that is the changeup, the timing is still not great on the changeup. It's gotten better, but it's not great. So he still gets out in front on the changeup. And now, all of a sudden, when he does get that fastball that's out over the heart of the plate, he's a tad late on it. And that's what we mean by in between. You're not on time. You're a little out in front on the changeup, and you're a little behind the fastball. And that is a terrible place for a hitter to be. And now, listen, he can work himself out of that, and I know that he's been putting the work in behind the scenes to do just that. But that's where it is right now. And, you know, because I've seen over the last week a couple of, you know, 92 to 94 mile an hour heaters that have been missed out over the plate that early in the season he was destroying, and now he's fouling them off, and he's just a little bit late. And that's because of the work that the changeup has done to get him you know, a little bit out of sync. That's what I see.
Really good stuff. Have a good call today and a safe trip to Texas, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Neil.
That's Brian Anderson of Bally Sports Sun as we get set for the Rays and Yankees last of four. First pitch at 1:40. Let's turn our attention to the minor league side. Joining us now, last year's first-round pick in Carson Williams, who is off to a really good start in Charleston. Carson, thanks very much for being with us.
All right. Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell me what it's been like as a guy who was drafted out of high school last year to just get the chance to play full season ball here in your first full year as a pro, and what the adjustment has been like.
I mean, it's been pretty special so far. Charleston's a beautiful place, and it's just really exciting to wake up every day and know you got a game to play. Honestly, I think that's the biggest adjustment is playing so many games. And it's a long season. I never realized how long it really was, but I'm loving every bit of it.
What's the hardest part with that so far, Carson? Is it the physical aspect or just the mental aspect of prepping every single day?
I definitely feel like it's the mental side of it more, because, I mean, there's obviously your ups and downs in baseball. And I feel like the toughest part is staying as even as possible mentally, just knowing you got to go out every day, work hard and get better.
You got a little taste of this last year in the Florida Complex League. How much did that help you kind of prepare in the off season for what was to come?
It was a little taste. I can honestly say when I was going home from that those couple months out there, all I wanted to do was come back. So it's super exciting to get a full year in, especially in Charleston. So I'm just having a good time with it.
Tell me what maybe you did physically in the offseason to get ready for this year, because I talked to a lot of people in the organization who feel that physically you've matured a lot from even when you were drafted.
Yeah, it was definitely cool. I hooked up with a trainer out in San Diego, and he actually trained me more as a baseball player than just working out and trying to get bigger. So a lot more stretching and different types of lifts came into my off season workouts. And I think that helped me a lot, got me faster, stronger, and made me a better baseball player.
Do you feel that on a daily basis? When did you start to notice the change?
I noticed the change when I began to get a little bit more flexible and a little bit more loose just with my body. Cause I could remember after I'd get done with a workout, I felt tight, or the next morning I was super sore. And with the new workouts that I was doing, I just felt a lot better. My body felt better, and mentally that's always nice.
Obviously you're at a premium position playing shortstop. Do you feel that change more defensively, or do you feel that more in the box in terms of your ability to get to pitches and your ability to maybe get certain extension on certain offerings? Where's the biggest difference?
I feel like it's definitely on the defensive side, on that quick move. And I guess you could say offensive too, with base running. I feel like a lot of it had to do with speed and quick movements.
So from a guy who, again, played high school travel ball, high level, what's the biggest difference that you've seen in terms of the type of baseball, not only playing every day, but the quality of the baseball playing in Charleston?
As you go up, whether you go to college, whether you go to rookie ball, whether you go to high A, low A, double A, triple A, it's just going to keep getting better. And people throw harder, people run faster, people hit the ball harder, and people pitch better. It's just everything gets better as you go up. So I feel like you just got to keep going with it.
Has there been anything that surprised you then?
There hasn't been much that has really surprised me. I was prompted before I got drafted. I had a lot of great conversations with a lot of great people who have been through the minor leagues, have played in the big leagues, and they've given me the right idea about what it's all about.
So conversationally, who give me some names of some guys who gave you really good advice.
I mean, I had my cousin, Zach Zahner, who he went through everything you could possibly go through in the minor leagues with the Yankees organization. And just he helped me out a ton with everything. He gave me a list, the do's and don'ts of the minor leagues. And it just it cleared a lot of things up for me.
What's the most important do and don't you learned that you're glad you knew about before you got to this?
That you can't get too mad at yourself, because it's a hard game. It's a mean game. That's what we'll say. It's a mean game. It's staying as confident as possible, because you're going to have times when you're not doing so hot, and you're going to have times when you're doing great. So you just got to try to keep getting better every day.
We're chatting with Carson Williams, again, top pick of the Rays, playing for Charleston in the Carolina League right now. And you're off to a really good start offensively and defensively. What have you liked most about your production to this point?
Right now, it's been really good with all the hitting guys that we have here. In spring training a little bit, I was struggling with some of the pitching and just pitch selection and just getting used to seeing premium pitching. And now that we're here, I mean, they've helped me out so much, and I've become more disciplined, and I'm hitting the ball harder, and everything seems to be going towards a better place.
When you're going in the right direction, Carson, what are the things that you're doing best? What kind of hitter would you describe yourself as?
Very, very gap to gap, with the occasional power sometimes. For me, I'm going good when I'm staying right center and I have my swing path going that way. And then I'll pull a ball when I need to. But the biggest thing for me right now is swinging at the right pitches and not missing the ones that are right there. For me, when I have my good at-bats, I let the ones out of the zone go, and I'm swinging at the right pitches.
And defensively, what are your strengths as a shortstop right now, as a middle infield guy?
The strengths right now, I mean, I've always had the arm, and love my on-the-run play. That's it's one of my favorite plays, and it's ingrained in my memory. But right now, just working on keeping my feet moving and always staying through the ball, never stop and get through the ball and make a throw.
I know the rules are a little bit different from level to level. What have been the biggest adjustments from a rule change standpoint at the minor league level? I know they've had some experimental rules during the course of this year with various leagues.
Yeah, I think the only thing I can touch on is that time clock. It's there and you can't get away from it. You kind of always got to have your eye on it when you're up to bat, because sometimes you take a little more time than you think and you got to rush back into the box so you don't get a strike called on you.
Does that help from a focus standpoint on the defensive end? Because you know that the game's constant and that you don't have a chance to even kind of lose your concentration or focus?
I don't really see it as much on the defensive side, mostly on the offensive side when you're in the box and you just know you got to get back in.
Have you been called out or had a strike taken away to this point? Or
have not as of yet, but I have had teammates that have gotten one of our teammates got struck out on it one time.
And from a group standpoint, you've been the most successful Rays minor league affiliate to this point. What's the talent level like, and how does this group kind of push one another as you get used to one another's personalities and talents?
I mean, we got guys on guys here in Charleston, and it goes all the way up. I mean, the Rays organization is stacked. It's so deep. It's ridiculous. But just for this Charleston team, it's really special. I mean, we got outfielders that take up the entire outfield. We got infielders that have hands. They're quick, great arms, and everybody here can hit. It's just, it's kind of unbelievable how good this team it really is when we're on.
And how motivational is that? How much do you think that helps you and push you to grow this year?
I mean, when you're playing against guys who are as good or better, it makes you want to play harder, always. Makes you want to be better than the next guy. And it just brings the team together, honestly.
And from either a coaching or teammate standpoint, who have been most helpful to you in terms of getting you adjusted to baseball life? I know you mentioned, you know, your cousin having played in the Yankee system helped you a lot coming into this year. But of the current group that you're with, who's been really helpful?
I got to say my two roommates, Mason Auer and Drew Baker. I mean, these guys went through college, and well, Mason went through a little bit of college, but Drew went to Texas Tech. Drew's been awesome. He's helped me out a lot, just teaching me new things and giving me a little feel about the game. And then Bobby Seymour as well. Like, these guys, they know, they've been through college. They got a little bit more experience than me, and they just teach me little things, and it's really cool and fun.
Well, keep up the good work. We're excited for the start that you're off to, Carson, and continued success with the River Dogs.
All right. Thank you very much.
And that's Carson Williams in his first full year in the Rays system for the Charleston River Dogs. He's played 36 games so far, hitting .315, 10 doubles, 7 triples, 5 homers, 24 RBIs, with 13 stolen bases and an OPS of .995. Not bad. Coming up, we will wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month with Sammy Byerly of Baseball Operations and Rays pitching coach Kyle Snyder on Gene Ramirez. Plus, we'll introduce you to Danny Docks of Baseball Ops. You're listening to This Week in Rays Baseball, and this is the Rays Baseball Network.
Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and joining us right now is Manager of Baseball Operations, Sammy Byerly, as we wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month. And Sammy, first of all, tell me your overall thoughts on how things have gone as you, as a group, have helped the Rays remember Gene and also built awareness for mental health in the Tampa Bay area.
It's been really incredible, the response, both internally with our players and staff, and externally, the response to both the cause and to Gene himself. I think it's very apparent how much he was loved and is loved by everyone here. And the response has really shown that. And I know his family is very grateful that has turned into kind of a larger effort to raise awareness in general.
Tell me how you first of all got involved, because generally you're handling a lot of stuff with the 40-man roster and contracts, and you kind of became kind of the go-to person to help organize in this entire month.
I wasn't expecting that, but I'm very grateful that I got to sort of act as the go-between for the Ramirez family and all the different people that have been involved within our organization. I think we knew we wanted to do something to honor him, and we knew we wanted to do it right. And by doing it right, it would involve, I think I wrote down everyone that has helped, and I think it's about 10 point people. So rather than having the Ramirez family be in contact with each person individually, I sort of funneled for them. So I can't take credit for much of anything that we actually did, but I connected everyone to the right places to make sure it was done right and with the level of care that we wanted to do it with. So it sort of happened by chance, but I'm just so grateful now to know the family and to have been able to help in any way that I could.
Well, it sounds like it's been quite successful, A, in building awareness. We've done something here every single week, but B, also the money that was raised from the auction during this month.
Yeah, David Eggles, our executive director, and Kevin Reed in our authentics department, and then Tyler Wall, our clubhouse manager, really put in a huge effort to make sure we had really cool stuff to auction off. I know that that's where it starts. We auctioned off the jerseys that the team wore in spring training and a lot of other items that coaching staff and players donated to help raise money. And I think we ended up around 25,000. And again, just the effort that people put into doing everything and making it what it was really incredible.
Can you put in perspective, I guess that can be a really big impact too for the crisis center. You know, I talked earlier this month with Clara Reynolds and their needs are really great right now.
Yes. Yeah. They're a fantastic group. They came to speak to our minor league players during spring training with the Ramirez family, and Clara and her group were really instrumental in helping them figure out their message, along with Vince Lodato, who is in who is our EAP, just really helped the family streamline their message and communicate with our guys. I know they're grateful for the partnership with us. We've had a partnership with them for a while, obviously with Brandon Lau helping them annually as well. So I know it's meaningful to them, not just the money, but that they're able to be a part of this.
It's been touching to see what the Rays have done at home, but also the way folks have joined in on the road. The Angels wore the green ribbons as well in Anaheim. And I know as you wrap up the month, you're going to Texas, Gene's home state, and the Rangers are helping too.
It's been, we sort of let the other teams know that we were going to play on the road in May, what we were doing with the green ribbons, just so they were aware. And the Angels jumped in and said, hey, we want to raise awareness too. We want to put those on our jerseys for our series there. They had some other efforts going on at their stadium as well. I noticed that they were handing them out to fans as they came in. And then the Rangers. So there is a foundation called Keeper of the Game that Gene and his family have worked very closely with. And they're based in Texas. Gene was raised in Fort Worth, Texas. And so David, again, reached out to the Rangers, his counterpart there, and they are going to have their 50-50 proceeds benefit Keeper of the Game. And they're going to have an on-field presentation with Gene's mom and dad, his brother, and a cousin of his before the game on the 31st. And they've gone above and beyond. There's going to be a ton of family out at the game as well. They've been really amazing and supportive of their family and of us wanting to help them. So it's been very cool just to see how much love there is across the game for just lifting up our family and Gene's family. And it's been really cool.
We talked with Tony and Carlos, Gene's parents, at the beginning of this month. And obviously it was incredible how strong and they are. What is it meant to them to see what the Rangers are doing beyond this?
Tony and Carlos are two of the most incredible people I think I've ever met. They're just warm people, and their whole extends to their whole family. And they were blown away to find out that the Rangers were also going to contribute and help and do something local. So that it means the world to them. They're grateful for a ticket to the game. So everything beyond that, they're just incredibly, incredibly grateful for everything that's gone on to honor their son.
For the Rays organization, you've been with this group for a while. How has this changed baseball operations, hopefully for the better? Obviously, you know, from tragedy sometimes comes a ray of hope, you know, some sunshine, and what you guys have done obviously stands out.
It's been an effort over the past couple of years to focus more attention on just our general well-being as a group, as players, as staff. And I think this accelerated our efforts. Really want to make sure that everyone's doing okay. And if they're not, that they're able to say that they're not doing okay and to know where to go for help, to know that there are resources within the Rays, outside of the Rays. There are lots of ways to try and help yourself. So it's been a horrible loss to lose Gene. You can see it with our guys, with our staff, but I know his family are really trying to make sure that it's something good comes from it. And they have always said, if they can help one person know that they can go get help, then they're happy.
I think it's well said. And congratulations to all involved in making this a successful month to raise awareness in mental health.
Thanks for all you did, Neil.
And that's Rays Manager of Baseball Operations, Sammy Byerly. To learn more about the organizations the Rays have supported through Mental Health Awareness Month, you can go to RaysBaseball.com/mental health. The last month certainly has been touching. In fact, I chatted with Rays pitching coach Kyle Snyder about what it's meant to see what the Rays have done during the course of May.
I have a tremendous amount of respect for our organization, but specifically, you know, given this initiative and what Gene meant to all of us and, you know, what raising the awareness means, you know, and just helping everybody understand that it's okay not to be okay and to continue to express that and be willing to talk about things that we go through. You know, we're all human and we got to remember that you know, I think, you know, whatever we can do beyond the green ribbon and all the other things that, you know, Eric and Matt and Brian have done, you know, just to raise this, you know, awareness just given, you know, in the light of the loss of Gene. But it's meant a lot to all of us, you know, just because every day we come to the yard, we miss him. Every day I walk down to the bullpen, it's a reminder. And, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it.
Throughout the month, we've been finding ways to remember Gene and put him in a way where our fans can understand. What did he mean to you? What was he like as a human being?
He was a tremendous person. He leveled me out every day, you know, and they can give me, you know, some crap down there just in terms of maybe how serious I'll be. But, you know, he had a smile that, you know, that changed all our moods, you know, on a daily basis. He really loved what he did, you know, that he was in his element and, you know, he had relationships with a lot of the guys because he was former teammates with about a handful of them, if not more. And just to see kind of that evolve and their relationships continue to grow, you know, the guys had so much trust in him and he was such an integral part of what, you know, we were able to accomplish the last few years. You know, I don't think those guys and Misha himself, I don't think they get enough credit for what they do and Charlie. You know, but, you know, these guys, they really had a fond, you know, fondness towards Gene. And Gene was a, you know, he was, yeah, stuff.
Do you have a good story as to something that, you know, touched you or just epitomize who he was
Sure.
as a human being?
Yeah. So last year they got me some shoes. I started to wear these Stan Smiths, and there were Stan Smith Yodas. There's a Star Wars version or whatever. And he painted a pair of Stan Smith Yodas for me, and I actually gave them to auction as part of the auction. And I signed them. But he gave me those, and he painted the Yoda's face, which is on the heel of the shoe, blue, so it matched up well with our uniforms.
And lastly, with all that's gone on, how has it brought the group together? Because you guys have had to deal with so much on a personal level.
Yeah, I mean, it usually things like that do, you know, bring people closer together. You know, and we were a close knit group to begin with, and that should speak volumes about, you know, what this has done for us and, you know, where we feel we all stand and what our pursuit is throughout the rest of the year in an effort to honor Gene.
And that's Rays pitching coach Kyle Snyder with his thoughts on the late Gene Ramirez. Again, the Rays will wrap up Mental Health Awareness Month fittingly in Texas, Gene Ramirez's home state. We've been having some features that we've been bringing you about Rays baseball operations. Let's introduce you to Danny Docks.
Hi, I'm Danny Docks. I am a coordinator in baseball development. I actually started with the Rays through the MLB Diversity Fellowship. It was the first year they were doing that back in 2018. Knew I wanted to be in sports post-college, had played softball through college, but wasn't quite sure what that avenue was going to look like. And then the fellowship ended up coming across my academic athletic advisor's desk at school, and everything kind of fell into place from there. Baseball obviously was the number one choice, not only with my softball background, but having loved baseball growing up and it being, in my opinion, such a niche sport compared to the others. It definitely kind of worked out in my favor. And 3 years later, I'm still here somehow.
So what ignited your passion for baseball as a kid?
I think, honestly, I always had a ball in my hand of some sort, even before I got on the field. I started in Little League Baseball. So the feeling of like being the only girl on the field and being around the guys was always fun. And then once I transitioned to softball, it just kind of became something that was an outlet for me. I loved the competitive nature. Like I said before, I loved the nicheness of it. It's not you know, it's a lot of fine-tuned motor skills and things like that that you may not get in other sports, in addition to just pure athletic ability, and being able to kind of hone those and let it take me through college and then ultimately like end up in a career like this has certainly been a blessing.
You say you were someone who played softball all the way through college, but you were more than just someone who played softball through college. You were a pretty good player at Princeton, right?
It depends on the day. I held my own some days. Other days were better than others, but I certainly enjoyed my time there and was blessed to be able to kind of play at that level and be able to carry my education out on the same side.
But you had the chance, what, to go? You did an overseas tour before you even started your fellowship, right?
I did. I went 3 months. I got the opportunity to kind of be a player coach in Sweden. Very different experience, but it was cool to kind of be able to come full circle. Softball is not super developed over there. So to kind of be able to come back and really remember why I enjoyed the game in the first place when I started all those years ago, it was really fun, really good experience to kind of be able to play both sides of the ball too and coach and play. But yeah, Rays were very, very nice in letting me kind of accomplish that before starting the fellowship.
Did you have other choices with the fellowship? Because I know you, in essence, apply to Major League Baseball and then teams reach out to you. Were the Rays the team you chose ultimately, or were there other options?
There were definitely other teams that reached out. The Rays were first and kind of pursued the whole way through. And, you know, talking to people that already worked in the industry, it was made very clear to me at the very beginning that if I was lucky enough to get the opportunity to go with the Rays, I'd be remiss to kind of not to take it. So while there were some other opportunities that came up along the way, the Rays were the most persistent, the first, and it certainly worked out.
So give us an idea of what types of things you've done for the Rays and maybe what you hope to do in the future.
So the fellowship, the first 18 months of my time with the Rays was almost like a rotational program where I got to kind of do a bunch of projects in a bunch of different areas, from research and development to player development, all of those types of things. And then towards the end of the fellowship is when I kind of started to funnel into more of what I do now, which is in baseball development, which incorporates a lot of player development, performance science for me. So my job is essentially I travel around to all of our minor league affiliates, spend some time there with our coaching staff and our players. And I'm kind of the buzzword we like to use is I bridge the gap between our on-field staff and players and our front office team and the analytics. So a lot of it is creating relationships, being available, ad hoc research projects as they come up for our coaching staffs, and just kind of making sure that communication flows between both ends. It's easy to be out of sight, out of mind when front offices, obviously the TROP and affiliates, are out there across the country. So I'm kind of that conduit between the two. As far as future, I'm not entirely sure what it holds. I do know I thoroughly enjoy being on the field. I enjoy my time at the affiliates, the day-to-day things that I get to do there. I love being able to put a glove on and form the relationships with the coaches and the players, in addition to the relationships I have in the front office. So what it looks like, I'm not sure, but I certainly would not want to stray any further from the field than I already am, if that makes sense.
Because I ask that since there are a lot of women now coaching, and mm-hmm. we do have a woman manager in the Yankee system. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you hope to do someday?
It's certainly not out of the question. I would love to dip my feet in there and see what that's like, but I'm not opposed to just kind of seeing where the coordinator route takes me as well. But I do enjoy the minor league side a lot, the player development side, getting to work with the younger guys, the guys working up through the system. So whether it's coaching or field coordinator or any type of coordinator, whatever that is, none of it is out of the question as far as what I want to do right now. But I do know that I want to be out there with the relationships on the field and being able to kind of do that on a day-to-day basis.
And what did you study at Princeton, and which has become more applicable, what you studied there or the softball experience that you had there?
I was an ecology and evolutionary biology major at Princeton. So there are certainly ways you can spin what I took from my education at Princeton, you know, problem solving, things like that. I wrote a thesis on color vision in hummingbirds. So not quite sure that applies to my day-to-day responsibilities here with the Rays. Certainly being able to put a glove on and my softball experience has lended itself to my responsibilities here potentially a little bit more, but it's not to say I got nothing out of my major, but it's not something that I would say that I use on a day-to-day basis here.
Great to introduce you to Danny Docks from Rays Baseball Operations, and terrific to hear her story as well. And we thank her and all the guests on the show today. Before we continue, why don't we pause for station identification? This is the Rays Baseball Network.
WDAE St. Petersburg, W237CW Pinellas Park, WBTP HD3 Clearwater, W224BE Brandon, and iHeart Radio Station.
Hey, the little Rays in your life can be part of the action, too, with the Rays Rookies Kids Club presented by Hi Chu. Sign up today. They'll receive a backpack, hat, 50% off tickets to select home games, and more. Memberships are limited. Go to RaysBaseball.com/RaysRookies. We do thank Danny Docks for being with us and all the guests on the show today, including Rays reliever Jason Adam, who's off to a brilliant start this year. Brian Anderson from Bally Sports Sun, the Rays top pick from a year ago, shortstop Carson Williams, joining us from Charleston. Also, Sammy Byerly from Rays Baseball Operations for talking about Mental Health Awareness Month, and also Rays pitching coach Kyle Snyder. If you ever have something you want to hear on the program, all you have to do is tweet me. You can do so at Neil Solons. Next week, the always entertaining Brett Phillips, and much, much more. Special thanks to producer Jason Berenger. I'm Neil Solons. The pregame show's next on the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Breaking ball lifted to the air, way up there, into right field and deep. Judge is going back towards the corner at the wall. Gone! And the Rays jump in front, 4-1.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
With first and second, the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss! He struck him out!
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.